This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
So Billy has fled the premises, but coming in here on a stallion, like a soap opera star, Roy Bellamy is the hero. Today he is smiling behind a mask. Billy has said that today we are all going to realize that Roy should have been running the show all along around here, putting the pressure on Roy immediately.
I let you guys know this a couple weeks ago. I'm not the hero type, all right? I told you if there was a situation where dragons came to Earth, I wouldn't be the person fighting the dragons. Short term, maybe I could luck into something heroic. Long term, not a good plan. Not a good plan for me to be the hero.
All right, so Billy has fled the premises. I can't blame him very much. You can't exactly coerce anybody to head into the center of everything other than me sitting here in the center of this abandoned hotel every day. But Roy Bellamy is leading us today. Is there a theme that you have for today's show, Roy?
Welcome to another Greg Cody Tuesday. A weekly celebration of white mediocrity.
Finally, guys, Thomas Edison's last breath is contained in a test tube in Michigan. How about that?
His last breath is in a test tube?
Wasn't Edison born in Fort Myers?
Wow, that's useless.
I think he was.
I mean, that's fundamentally useless.
I'm like, on
that's
it,
not contributing anything to the conversation. I really hope you're wrong on this on top of everything else.
He was born in Ohio.
I love that. I mean, it's not just that you're useless, but also factually inaccurate.
There's
with your useless information.
Something having to do with Edison.
Okay,
and Fort
thanks.
Myers.
Make it worse. Okay, great.
I mean, Google it.
Okay, well.
Google Edison.
I don't want to do this anymore.
I'm on it, Greg. I'm on it.
Like a Thomas Edison High School or something in Fort
Myers. Okay, well, wow. You are climbing up the uninteresting ladder.
Thomas Edison and Henry Ford both had winter estates in Fort Myers.
Oh!
What are you celebrating other than ruining the show?
This is another Greg Cody Tuesday, a weekly celebration of Caucasian mediocrity.
All right, we'll get back to Greg Cody of the Miami Herald in a second.
Where are we going to store his last breath?
His last phlegmy coughing breath. Yes. We're going to get to a second because he's deeply unhealthy and his son is worried about him. And they just had a conversation off air where Chris was saying that he didn't think his father had water in his top 10 liquids. So we're going to get Greg Cody's list of top 10 liquids in a second. But before we do that, we have around here what we believe to be the greatest caller in the history of sports radio. Now, we have not heard from him in many years, but I've been told, and Billy, this sound couldn't be cleared, right? He made an appearance yesterday in New York. What's the show that he ended up emerging from the shadows on?
He yesterday was on Boomer and, Boomer and Geo. There we go. He was on Boomer and Geo yesterday, our longtime nemesis, I would say, right? He's a caller that would call in and essentially try to, embarrass you by telling you that you know what was going on. He knew more about sports than you did. He had the highest rating in the history of sports radio. And if you thought that our friend Al Lombardo had changed in the, decade or so since we last heard from him, he did not. And you could find his call to Boomer and Geo on there. He did the exact same thing. He was bragging about his Arbitron ratings. But as you pointed out, we couldn't get that clear, Dan.
All right. Well, so the audience can find it, can go on a search. As Greg Cody likes to say, Google it. So you can go ahead and find the sound that we haven't had clear. But we've been wanting to hear from him. This is 10 years old, the call that we're going to play for you. I think after that, we retired calls forever. We really don't take calls around here anymore because no one was going to do it better than this. So here is, and again, you can find his latest work 10 years later. See how different it may be or not be. Yes, we
did retire calls right up until the Doliak songs that we tried a couple of months ago.
That's right. Okay, thank you, Stugatz. You're a very good custodian of these things. I appreciate you keeping an eye on them. So here is Al Lombardo.
Al, you're on 790.
Yeah, hi, Lombardo. Dan, I can't believe how accurate you are on this obvious point while how slow on the uptake the other guy is. It is so obvious. I mean, you take a look at golf. Someone who has the yips. Sam Snead, my God, in the late 50s, he had to go to side saddle. Then they had to change the rule. You couldn't go croquet. He still went side saddle the opposite way. Both feet to the left of the ball. you see guys like Bernhard Langer that have had the yips and went to the long putter three different times. You've got guys like Ian Baker Finch, who's one of the greatest putters in the world, won the British Open, got the yips, went to the long putter, couldn't even putt again, quit the game, became an analyst. If you go to bowling, are you trying to tell me that if Mark Roth is starting to miss a lot of 10 pins in the channel or hooking it too much, that he isn't going to go smart enough, which he eventually did, to a lighter ball? A 14-pound ball, sometimes that look like a little child speckled ball at your local bowling alley, so we can move cross alley and throw it up to make 10 pins at the 95% rate you're supposed to on the PBA Tour. If you can use an open stroke like Joan Rivers on bad acid, if you get the job done, get the job done. It's all about whatever works, works. It's just like life. If you want to go through life trying to fornicate with the most beautiful woman in the world that you can while also have a main squeeze and a four or five mistresses on the side, rock on, and then try to keep trading up. But then once you're lucky enough to find that foxy angel of your life, if you're not smart enough to grab onto her and hold onto her for 14 years while you enjoy your summer home in Lake Garda for 6 weeks every year, then you're a dummy. But what works, works, Dugatz, you lame uptake.
I believe the question that he was calling in about was Shaq shooting free throws underhanded. I believe that was the topic. This is to the day, the 16-year anniversary of the Miami Heat acquiring Shaquille O'Neal. And I'm pretty sure that's what we were talking about. An excellent effort by us laying out that entire call, because we were laughing the entire time, but we had to turn our microphones off. Do we have another Lombardo call, Roy? I know these things have to be looked at before we air them, because I believe we have a second call, and I don't know if it holds up or if in today's climate, Lombardo seems like he's right on the edge of saying something he shouldn't.
The thing that's great about Lombardo that I realized when I was listening to the clip when he called into Boomer and Geo is that Lombardo still lives in South Florida, because he said where he was, but he's listening to local New York sports radio. And then he went on to challenge them right at the beginning and say, after he bragged about his ratings and how great he was and how knowledgeable he is, he said, I know everything about 25 sports, not just the four sports that you guys know and talk about. I know all the sports. I know golf. I know bowling. What was the first sport that was back? And they're like, I don't know, what was it, Lombardo? He's like, horse racing was the first sport back. I know everything about horse racing. And you guys, when you get challenged by people like me, all you do is you hang up on the caller. And they're like, so are you daring us to hang up on you? Is that what's going on right now?
He called the main sports the meat and potatoes. He's like, you guys know the meat and potatoes. I got all the other food. Is
All right. We will see in a second if we can get to another Lombardo call. But let's do instead Greg Cody's top 10 liquids as we wait for Roy to clear some of this Lombardo sound. I've been spending the last half of this segment just staring at Stugatz's ass crack again. His line has gone down and he's just scampering all over his hotel room with plumber's butt. So number 10, Roy, number 10, Greg Cody, your 10th favorite liquid is?
Clam juice.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Oh, my God. What an odd one.
The briny, salty residue of a steamer is fantastic.
Good shock value.
What an upset.
No, this is good because you assume when he says liquids, it's going to be just things that he's like drinking, right? You don't drink clam juice, do you?
Oh, absolutely, I do. Sure.
You do?
Oh,
I thought
yeah.
There was something to cook with or something. You drink like
it?
Well,
I cook with it as well, but yeah, I drink it straight, preferably home brewed from actual clams, but I'll drink it. Snow's has a beautiful clam juice in a little bottle, like a little 6-ounce bottle. It's just divine.
All right, you know what? Let's pause the show for a second, because if all of them are as good as number 10, I want to savor this, okay? Put it on the poll, please, at Lebatard Show, Chris. Do you know what clam juice tastes like? And would clam juice be in anyone's top 10 liquids list? Anyone's. Anyone on the planet.
Welcome to another Greg Cody Tuesday, a weekly celebration of white mediocrity.
Cody, your argument is
what should be in the Punctuation Hall of Fame?
I mean, you have to start with the comma and the period, I would think. Those are the all-timers. That's Babe Ruth and Michael Jordan.
Okay, but what else? How many did you put into the Hall of Fame? How many?
I would put an exclamation point, a question mark.
What did you argue for last week? You argued for the ampersand last week.
Yeah, I love the ampersand.
Man, you don't listen to things in this segment. Yeah. You don't remember what you said last week.
I love the ampersand.
You are doddering, man. Just doddering. I argued last week that there could only be four in the Hall of Fame, and you put the ampersand in. It's not even a form of punctuation.
I just like the word.
How about the three dots?
The ellipses. Ooh, the Greg, I was trying to get the conversation started again, and the reason for having the conversation, you don't even bleep and remember.
German umlaut would be in my International Hall of Fame.
This is another Greg Cody Tuesday. For over a decade, a weekly celebration of white mediocrity.
Chris Cody, did you remember, as your assignment, working away from work, did you remember to go get garlic today so we could test yesterday's claim that if you put your feet in a bag of garlic, you will be able to taste it in your mouth even up to an hour later? Do you have, are we ready to do that experiment?
Yes, I have garlic.
All right. All right. So how do we do this? Do you have a bag? Go get it during the segment and show me when you're back with the garlic and explain to me what it is that we're trying to figure out.
I love that he is frustrated. He's angry. I've told Chris forever, you have to be careful what you say on this show, because in all likelihood, if you say something, you're going to be asked to do it. Either by me or by Dan, more than likely it's going to be Dan. I don't know what to tell you.
You know what's funny about that, Stugatz? You said you got to be careful about what you say on this show, but during the last segment, we all learned during the break that Greg Cody is way too careful about what he doesn't say on the show, because we all learned during the break that Greg Cody knows the caller Lombardo, who I imagine... who I imagine smells like cigarettes. Like Lombardo sounds like cigarettes. How can he not smell like cigarettes? So Greg Cody, please help me understand how. First of all, I don't understand why you didn't tell us last segment that Lombardo is someone you know. I can't believe that that's something that happened.
By the way, it's possible because Greg sounds like cigarettes, but never smells like cigarettes. It is possible.
So tell us everything you know about Lombardo.
Al Lombardo does smell like cigarettes. He used to haunt Dolphins camp back when I covered the Dolphins regularly.
Greg, clear your throat. Just get it together before you speak into the microphone.
No, we're good. He's good.
Can you please not sound like disease? Everyone is trying not to think about the coronavirus, and God.
You sound like it.
You know what? I feel like a million bucks. I'll tell you what. Al Lombardo used to haunt Dolphins camp back when I covered the Dolphins a lot. And he had a style of questioning. You know, he always had a microphone, big giant microphone. He had a style of questioning. When he launched into a question, it was as if he were standing at a lectern leaning into a microphone, like it was his forum all of a sudden. And he would get about a foot away from Don Shula and launch into these elongated questions that very peripheral to anything anybody was talking about. I remember one of his questions involved the New York Giants averaging only 3.5 yards per rush or something like that. And Shula's eyes would glaze over, steam would start coming out of his ears, and he would just, it took everything under his power not to just literally lash out at Al Lombardo. I believe Shula once asked the PR guy of the Dolphins, is there a way to keep that guy out of the media room?
Wow, Al Lombardo made Don Shula not want freedom of the press. Billy, why are you laughing at this?
Cobbler.
The cobbler. Don Shula, thank you for nothing.
The cobbler, God rest his soul.
You're laughing and pointing at me, Stugatz. How many people do you think got that joke? How many people? You tell me where Billy comes in, he interrupts me, he takes the stage, and he gives me one useless word that I now have to explain to the audience, because who the hell is going to get that joke?
I would say six people understood that joke, and I am not including everyone on this show.
Billy, explain the joke.
Well, Greg used to call Don Shula the cobbler, and then Don Shula didn't know why, and he called him into his office one day to explain the joke. I'm just laughing that not only did Greg not tell us that he knew who Al Lombardo was in the first or second segment, he hasn't mentioned that in the 10 years that that sound has been played.
Billy, explain the damn joke.
Well, Don Shula's name is Don Shula. Greg used to call Don Shula the cobbler because Shula sounds like shoe, and the cobbler is someone that works on shoes.
Right. Now, his nickname was Shoes. People used to call him Shoes. So I called him in print the cobbler, thinking it was a great thing to make a nickname. I love nicknames of nicknames, like when you call the pitching mound the bump or the hill. So I did that with Shoes becoming the cobbler. He didn't have much of a sense of humor to that, and I had to explain it to him.
Greg Cody was called aside by intimidating Don Shula, who, like a rump, he grumped. He's like, what's this cobbler thing? And then you hear stammering Greg Cody explain what Billy just did. Well, your name is kind of Shoes. I like nicknames of nicknames. Cobblers make shoes. And Shula walked away from him mid-answer.
What was going on with the Dolphins back in the day where Don Shula had to be pulling people aside to explain nicknames in print and taking these long questions from Al Lombardo? What a horrible existence.
I would say that what happened is that he was covered by very poor media members.
Pay that man his money.
We will get to Greg Cody's other nine liquids in the next segment. Greg Cody's Back in My Day is going to be in about 5 minutes. We're going to talk to Pablo Torre at 11:30 Eastern about this whole Adrian Wojnarowski controversy, how it relates to China. There's just a bunch of stuff there that is interesting to chew on, as you just can't get away, basically, from politics seeping into sports. Ron McGill, the animal guy, will join us at noon Eastern. I don't suspect politics will get into that segment, but I'm actually, Stugatz, and this is a bummer, right? Because this is where we are, basically. Everything's a poison well. Everything is an argument. I am actually not looking forward to this Jorge Masvidal conversation we're going to have in an hour and a half, because I'm going to have to ask him something about some of the things he's done on social media that I didn't know that he was doing. Like, he introduced me to an alt-right group because of something he was doing on social media. It's not something I even knew about before he posted some fake Kurt Cobain quote, with conspiracy theories in it. So I don't know how I'm going to handle this, but it's 90 minutes from now, however it is that we're going to handle it. But before we get into Greg Cody's Back in My Day, Cody, were you wounded that you were not able to scoop anybody on our alleged not a demotion where they're cutting an hour out of the radio show? Were you bummed about that you were not able to break that story, that it broke instead by ESPN press release?
Yes. I felt let down. I invited you to give me the scoop, and you declined.
Well, I'll give you one now. They're demoting Highly Questionable, too. Go ahead and put that in the paper, to the graveyard shift of 2:30 in the afternoon. I'm actually, Stugatz, because the whole idea of what we built here at Lebatard and Friends is that slowly, I thought it was going to be my choice, but slowly, at our pace, sort of like wean me out of here and allow other people who have been in our universe to grab at all the good stuff. And I'm thrilled that Mina Kimes is going to be doing this hasn't been announced? No portion of this? Because I went on vacation. Am I announcing something that has? Well, I'm allowed to announce my portion of it, but regardless, we're being replaced at 4:00. If you understand what ESPN is, ESPN is basically a rights company, okay? So everything is about the rights, and it makes sense that at 4:00 they would put an NFL show when they're in bed with their rights holders, and their rights holders need programming. And what is happening to Highly Questionable, which has been a lot of fun to do for many, many years, is what happens everywhere at this network, which, if you're paying close attention, you understand this. Everything that is programming on any of the ESPN networks is just an infomercial about sports meant to get you to the game.
Everything is about getting you to the game. So everything here is like almost totally replaceable. Very few of the things are actually ratings movers, and you could put anything anywhere, especially now where people can find things if they want it. But there is no disputing that 2:30 in the afternoon is a graveyard like that. Who the hell is watching television at 2:30 in the afternoon? So go ahead, Greg. And because that's what I was actually reacting to when we were on vacation and I was talking about demotion. Like, there's no way right. to argue. You could sit here and make the argument that we're moving to digital, that it's stupid that we do this show this way and inefficient, the radio show, because we're sitting here through commercials all the time and we could be doing all this stuff without commercial interruption by podcast. Like, I understand that evolution, and I also understand what they're doing in the afternoon, but I thought they were going to announce all of that at the same time, and evidently they didn't.
All right, so thank you for clearing that up. The demotion portion of this is your television show, because from a radio standpoint, we are being paid the same to do less work, and as I said yesterday, in my mind, that is a massive promotion. Thank you, ESPN.
Okay, but we're not going to be working less. Only you might be working less because you refuse to come in unless they're paying you extra. Time now for Greg Cody's Back in My Day.
And now, it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
Oh, Jesus, he's coughing already.
Fireworks. So, we're in China. It's 200 BC. The first fireworks are invented inadvertently when someone tosses bamboo into a flaming pit. Crackle, bang. It's a firecracker. 1,000 years later, 800 AD, China again. An alchemist mixes together sulfur, charcoal, and potassium nitrate, hopes his concoction will unlock the secret to eternal life. Instead, by accident, he's invented gunpowder. Becomes a local custom to pack the powder into bamboo or paper tubes and throw it into flames in order to ward off evil spirits. Soon, militaries have harnessed gunpowder and begin blasting projectiles at their enemies. By 1600, the British have transformed projectiles into colorized displays used for entertainment. King James was so enthralled with fireworks, he awarded knighthood to his fire master. The Brits introduced the phenomenon to the 13 colonies. As the Declaration of Independence is signed in 1776, John Adams, referring to fireworks as illuminations, envisions, quote, a great anniversary festival solemnized by pomp and parade. So there you go. It's the 4th of July, nighttime. I close my eyes and it sounds like we're in the middle of a civil war, which in the American summer of 2020 sounds a little too close to the truth. Bombs bursting in air, the sounds of mortar fire and gunshots, crackling, smoke. Imagine being one of the thousands of old soldiers living with PTSD. You're trying to fall asleep to the sound of fireworks. Suddenly you're in a helicopter tearing across the Mekong Delta in 1968. Why? So your neighbor, Mr. Pyrotechnic, can have his little staging area out in front of the sidewalk and blast bottle rockets into the air. Are you ever amazed like me that fireworks are still a thing? I mean, they're crazy expensive. They kill handfuls of people every year and injure thousands. In their entrails of smoke or toxic chemicals and pollutants, they basically serve no real purpose. Your local city puts on an annual display that puts your little neighborhood thing to shame. And yet there you are every year on the 4th of July and New Year's Eve, annoying your neighbors and making my dog bark incessantly all night long. Except when they're chasing their tail or angrily yelling at a commercial on TV. A dog never seems dumber, by the way, than when he is baying, braying, and barking at the banging of fireworks, never once thinking to himself, geez, the noise keeps happening and my barking seems to be doing no good whatsoever. I'm not anti-fireworks per se. Let's just rein it in, folks. Why are people so enchanted by fireworks in the first place? Ooh, ah, every time. I mean, there's basically a handful of types of fireworks in a few different colors that do the same damn thing over and over again. There's really been precious little advance in technology since King James. Whistling boom, sound, ooh, ah, like we're Pavlov's dogs. Like we didn't just see the same thing 5 seconds earlier. You know, back in the 60s at 1440, we didn't have big bucks to spend on things that blasted high and bloomed in the sky. Back then, you were content to twirl a few sparklers, maybe toss a cherry bomb or two, then you called it a night, unless you were feeling really saucy.
Then you might light a string of black cat firecrackers in old man McGillicuddy's mailbox and hightail it the hell out of there, grinning like a mule eating briars. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it was back in my day.
This show ain't free. Time for some ads.
Greg, this has been your best show in about 3 years. I'm not really even kidding. Let's get right to it with Pablo Torre, his podcast, ESPN Daily. He's the new host. He replaces Mina Kimes, who has moved on to bigger and better things, stealing my time slot, infuriating Poppy because Mina Kimes is taking the highly questionable time slot. I wasn't supposed to announce that, but I already kind of did. So there it is. Pablo Torre with us on ESPN Radio. Pablo, help me understand this letter from Josh Hawley, Missouri, senator, to Adam Silver. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, Josh Hawley is a hawk on China. He is a hardline guy on China in general. And this is something that is both super valid, because let's be clear about something, and I think it's worth the clarity here. What is happening in China, Dan, is a series of human rights abuses. There are atrocities going on there. So Hong Kong is one aspect of it. The Free Hong Kong movement, Hong Kong wanting autonomy from Beijing, Hong Kong experiencing crazy amounts of police brutality right now in parallel to our own kind of experience in America, except there is no recourse for the protesters to ever change the government in control of them. That's all going on right now. The government, by the way, has unsurprisingly exonerated itself when it comes to police brutality in Hong Kong. So Free Hong Kong is one issue. But there are other issues, too. And there are, like, literally as many as 1 million Uyghurs, these members of Muslim minority groups in northwest China, who are currently in internment camps. And I know it's probably jarring for me to throw all of this up on ESPN Radio right now, but this is, like, in the news. Read the New York Times, read PBS, read global news organizations. This is very much out in the open as much as China disputes it. So a historically enormous amount of people are in internment camps, ostensibly because they belong to inconvenient Muslim minority groups. And by the way, there's like forced sterilizations and abortions that are being reported by the Associated Press to curb the birth rate in northwest China among these Muslim minority groups. All of which is to say that bringing attention to that stuff is super important. But the Josh Hawley letter was also simultaneously pretty transparent trolling. And it felt like it so often does, Dan, like a bunch of important issues brought up to silence the voices of other oppressed groups in America. It reminded me fundamentally of What About Chicago, except in this case, it's What About China. You don't actually care about the people in Chicago, or in this case, China, especially if you're the people retweeting the Josh Hawley letter over and over again. You do care, though, about silencing those voices that you politically disagree with.
Isn't that usually how Asian plight is used?
Yes. I mean, that's what's been so fascinating to me and heartbreaking as a person who sees it through that lens, because nobody ever really cares about what goes on in Asia or to Asians in general. You know, Richie Incognito says stuff about Pearl Harbor and massage parlors, and it's in a document. Nobody in our business even cares about that. There is no visibility, really, for Asian Americans in our country. Nobody really cares about that. However, if you can use Asian Americans as this model minority to argue against affirmative action, well, suddenly we are allies. We are very important people. If suddenly, in this case, human rights abuses are happening in an Asian country, well, suddenly now, even though we don't care at all about police brutality in America, we do care about it in Hong Kong. And to me, Dan, I find it very hard to believe that those critics are our allies. It feels like, once again, we are only useful insofar as we are a hammer to beat down upon people that they really, really don't like.
Pablo, were you, are you disappointed that the league chose business? They made a business decision over expressing support for the people going through this.
Disappointment's, I think, a super instructive word here, because that speaks to our expectations for any corporation in 2020 in this global flattened economy. So to me, I wasn't surprised. And my level of disappointment is only if you really buy into the notion that the NBA or any corporation is actually able to behave in the public interest on behalf of these oppressed people, as opposed to what their actual defined purpose and mission is as a corporation, which is to make as much money as possible for as long a time as possible for their shareholders. So I would love it, obviously, if business was to be sacrificed for these issues, but I'm also not expecting that at this point. And I think it's super naive and also a larger conversation for all of us to have, right? Like, we all make compromises. Compromises are at a certain point understandable and logical. But at the same time, if you're going to be a league that stands on principle and slogans about freedom and equality, I do think it's fair to point out that when you implicitly approve of what's going on with your business partners, that's something you'll have to answer to as well, and you better have good answers.
Oh, it's about principle. I just think that they're spelling it a little differently than we are when we talk about that stuff. Because when you read everything that that Senator Hawley wrote, he starts with the Hong Kong stuff and he starts with China and he stays there for a while. But he was talking about the social messages. You told us first, hey, they've got to be careful and this stuff has to be pre-approved because somebody goes out there with free Hong Kong, all of a sudden the NBA is going to have a huge problem on its hands because it was a Daryl Morey tweet that started all this and cost them hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes, yes, this is all foreseeable. All of this was foreseeable. And Dan, when it comes to the Hawley stuff, I want to be clear about something too, because the people who are amplifying that message around American precincts in media, they don't, from my observation, they don't really want people to like read deeper into China or Hong Kong. The goal there is not education. It's not, hey, look at what's going on in China and Hong Kong. It's crazy and it's indefensible. That's not the goal. The goal instead is for them to say to all the people on the opposite political aisle, you are just as hypocritical and just as bad as us. It is a cynical move. It is not one done for the enlightenment of the reader or the sports fan. It is merely an attempt to clear a conscience because there is dirt underneath someone else's moral fingernails too. It's not about continuing the discussion. It's not even really about let's free Hong Kong. No, it's merely about, hey, LeBron, you said that you're pro-freedom, but what about this? And that, to me, is just so transparent and depressing at this point.
Pablo, stay there for a second. We're going to talk a little more about this stuff. 786-456-4837 is the telephone number if you want to talk to Ron McGill. I've told you that story of Keon Dooling and Shaquille O'Neal being on the boat of Mickey Arison and Keon Dooling looking at Shaquille O'Neal and saying, Shaq, you ain't rich. This is rich. Shaquille O'Neal bought his boat. Did you see this the other day, Stugatz? Shaquille O'Neal bought a boat and asked people to help him come up with a name. And somebody wrote into him, I think it was Andrew Yang, if I'm not mistaken, wrote into him, call it free throw because then you'll never sink it. 786-456-4837 is the telephone number if you want to talk to Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Billy, what do you have for Ron this week?
Ron, I saw pictures going around the internet that you had taken. There was a gorilla, I guess, that had gotten into some sort of scuffle with another gorilla, and you had to have surgery on it to repair some injuries. You gave it COVID tests. And while I was seeing it, they were kind of cool pictures, but I was wondering, have you ever had an animal that you didn't give quite enough of whatever the dosage is to knock them out that woke up mid-surgery? Because that seems like it would be horrifying.
Well, yeah, it would be horrifying. Now, I'm fortunate to say that animal's under general anesthesia. There's one person there is just constantly with the anesthesia, monitoring the anesthesia, so it's very unlikely to happen. But having said that, I worked with a veterinarian once at the old Cranon Park Zoo with a huge chimp. His name was Colonel. We pulled him out. He darted him because he had a stitch up an arm on a cut that he had in his arm, and we had him on the grass, laying down in the grass. The veterinarian's kneeling between his legs, leaning over, stitching over his arm. I'm on one arm on the one side, another other keepers on another arm on the other side, and then all of a sudden, and I'm not exaggerating one second, this chimp just sat up, put his face literally 6 inches in front of the veterinarian's face, who was kneeling between his legs, and just went, "Wah!" screamed at the top of his lungs. The one guy holding the arm on the other side jumped into the canal behind him. I just froze. I didn't know what else to do. I just froze, holding his arm, and then his eyes rolled back in his head, and he fell back down. And I looked at the vet, and I mean, the vet didn't even flinch, and I go, "What happened?" And he said, "That happens often. They use a drug called ketamine, and when they use ketamine, the chimp will often hallucinate, though he's totally under anesthesia, will hallucinate like sleepwalking and have that kind of effect." Well, I said, "Well, next time, please tell me about that crap, because that was a very horrible moment for me."
Garlic Feet, you're on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. What do you have for him?
Hey, Ron. Animals in the wild, do they ever get to enjoy anything that could be thought of as a dessert? When they eat something, like, do they have any form of what they would consider a dessert?
Well, they don't eat things in the sequence that we eat things. In other words, okay, this is my main meal, and now I'm going to have the dessert. Usually if they find something that they like that's would be equivalent to our dessert, they'll eat that first. You know, they eat the tastiest parts of things first. But there's certainly some things, some flowers to some animals, some nectar and flowers, pure sugar, they love that. Fruits, of course. You know, there's a tree called the amarula tree that when it blossoms out and the fruits fall down, they actually eat so much of it that they can get drunk. It ferments, and they actually, you've probably seen those YouTube videos of the baboons, you know, tipping all over themselves. Even elephants can get tipsy eating that. So it is sort of a dessert in that it's a pleasing, high sugar content food that they will eat to extremes sometimes.
Billy, why were you laughing? Were you laughing because somebody, I can guess who it is, simply coughed straight into a microphone there? Like, I can take a betting favorite on who that was. Who was that? Because I didn't see who did it, but I'm imagining
we know.
That.
We know.
Okay, great.
Everybody knows who that was.
All right, great. You are totally useless, Greg. Tubby, you're on ESPN Radio with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Tubby.
Hey, I just want to remind everybody, when you're running up on a squirrel on the road, toot the horn, and they'll get out of the way. And why can't squirrels figure that out on their own?
You know, squirrels are notorious for panicking. People will see a squirrel on the side of the road and think, well, as I drive up, it's going to just go up to the tree to the right. Many times they run right into the car, and people don't understand why they do that. Understand, squirrels have tons of what we call fast twitch muscles. If you watch squirrels, the way they jump onto trees and the way they run, it's like a lightning bolt. I just don't understand why their brains don't function in a way to give them the common sense to run away from a car instead of running into it. It's like armadillos. They do the same thing. When they panic, they jump straight up into the air like 2 to 3 feet. And a lot of times they're crossing the road. If they didn't panic, the car would go over them without running over them. They fit under the car, but then they jump up and they get killed by the car that way because that's an instinct. I can't explain it. I'm not a squirrel. I don't know why they don't do what they should do.
We learned, and he's been doing this with us probably about 10 years right now, and we learn something every time. So put it on the poll, Guillermo, please. Did you know that squirrels were notorious for panic? And did you know that armadillos jumped up 3 feet in the air? Because that is not something I thought that they could do at all. Is there another panicky animal that you would put in that class with the armadillo and the squirrel?
Not in the jumping thing, but like vultures, when they panic, they projectile vomit. I mean, like exorcist type crap really comes out, and it's the most horrific fluid you could ever imagine smelling, feeling, and God forbid if your mouth is open, tasting.
That hasn't happened to you, has it?
Yeah, it has.
No.
What?
It did, and that's exactly what happened to me. I haven't thrown up since I was probably like 6 years old, but that was as close as it came to me. I mean, I had a horrible gagging reflex.
You're talking about 6 years old.
All right,
congratulations.
Put it on the poll. Have you, at Lebatard Show, have you thrown up more recently? That's 54 years ago you're talking about, Ron. Have you thrown up in the last half century? Put it on the poll. Steve, you're on with Ron McGill of Zoo Miami. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, this is Bernie, if that works.
Sure. Go ahead, Bernie.
Hey, good. Listen, Ron, I wanted to ask you, did you see the documentary a while back on Serengeti? It's like
yes,
a five-part.
I did. Yeah. It was a great documentary. You know, it's awfully anthropomorphized, so to speak, in that And I think there's a lot of CGI that goes on. They had some great footage. Don't get me wrong. They had some incredible footage, but there's a lot of CGI, a lot of computer generated images kind of composed over and above that. And, you know, it's a nice story. I thought it did a nice job. It was beautifully shot. But at the end of the day, if you really travel to Africa, you'll realize it's not quite as story-like.
Ron, I have I have two questions for you. I read a story yesterday about a black bear entering a Colorado man's home. I am wondering, you wake up one day, there is a bear in your home roaming through your kitchen. What is the proper thing to do? I run and call the cops. I did that on a frog. This guy decided to take on the bear. What do you do, Ron?
Well, look, I'm glad you brought that up, Stugatz, because, you know, people panic about bears and, oh, bears are monsters. Look what they're going to do. They're going to kill you. Listen, the guy is the first one to admit, you know, he went out there and what he tried to do was the bear saw him, didn't do anything. But then he got freaked out. He said, let me see if I can get the bear out. So he went to open the garage door with a remote garage door opener. And as the garage door went, and went up, then all of a sudden the bear came at him and took a swipe at him and then ran away because the bear panicked. So what the point here is, guys, listen, if that bear was mean, vicious, horrible, it would have killed the guy. It took one swipe at him. It's a bear, so it took one swipe at him, so he had a couple of good swipes on the side of his face. But let's look at the end result. The bear swiped at him like, Jesus, just get the heck out of me. Now I'm getting out of here. He wanted nothing to do with the guy. The guy had a doors open, enabled the bear to get in. That's what I try to teach people. We need to learn to coexist with these animals. Lock your flipping doors. Lock your garbage cans. Do not. The bear is going to try to look for food. That's all he was doing. He was looking for food. He was coming in. It was Goldilocks and the three bears. Okay, he came in looking for the food. He found the food. Then the guy came down, scared him, opened the garage door, scared him, and he swiped at him. That's it. If you see a bear, step back. Go away. Do not worry about it. Just get away. The bear will go away. Give him a chance to get out. This guy just made the wrong move by opening that garage door, which startled him, and the guy's the first one to admit that.
All right, best running back in the animal kingdom. Is it a squirrel, a little scat back? What do you think?
No, it's not going to be a squirrel. I've said it over and over. It's a freaking elephant or a rhino.
Oh,
you don't
wow.
have to be fast. You don't have to be cutting. You don't have to be fast or cutting. You just have to be unstoppable. Who's going to stop a rhino or an elephant going straight up the line? Tell me, Stugatz, who?
I love that he said, I said this over and over again. It is. It's like the 50th time we've asked him a version of that question. Ron, thank you for being on with us. We appreciate it, sir.
All right, guys. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
See you, Ron.
Now to the good stuff.
Chris Cody noticing two things. One, landline, the rare landline hang-up there. And he was just blistering Ron McGill, classic animal apologist, saying that we shouldn't leave our doors open because the bear was breaking and entering. And he just apologized for the bear. It's bull bleep, but he's just a homer for the animal kingdom. The big sport event of the weekend was involving this guy, Jorge Masvidal. He is on with us now. Thank you, Jorge, for making the time. A lot of people were disappointed that we couldn't watch you stand in the center of the octagon and fight this dude the way that you wanted to fight him. And I know that actually mixed martial arts people who know their stuff would point to what you did on 6 days and be hugely impressed by it, especially against that guy staying on your feet as much as you did. But can you explain to us the entertainment value of the fight? How did you feel about that as the guy people were tuning in to watch?
For starters, let me say, what's up, man? And we could always skip the formalities, Jimmy. You acting like you ain't my boy no more. You don't got to thank me for being on the show, man. Come on. We go two way back now, Dan. You don't got to ever thank me for being on the show. And two, Stewie, what's up? I've been calling you. I lost one time. You haven't returned any of my phone calls.
Yeah.
I know what type of person you are now.
Yeah. No, but listen, here's the thing. So I was waiting.
Upsetting. It's kind of upsetting. I have your address. I'm just going to show up.
Right.
And that's it, because you're I won last and you want to forget about
me. Oh, no.
You blocked me.
No,
is that
no.
right? Because now I'm sending my messages and they're not going through. I'm figuring you blocked me, bro.
No, I didn't block you. I love you. No, I didn't block you. I love you. And I need a babysitter this weekend, by the way.
What are you doing? Tough love on me? That's why you blocked me?
Well, no, I was disappointed because Abu Dhabi, I was waiting for you. I thought the limo was picking me up, you and I, private jet.
Limo.
And yeah, and no one came. And my bags were packed and I was ready to go with you. And, you know, I figured, listen, I understand you're disappointed,
we're gonna chalk that one up to transportation.
Okay. All right. I got a lot of leverage right now. I mean, you're 1-0 with me. You're 0-1 without me. Let's keep that in mind, okay?
I'm a numbers guy. I'm not going to argue that.
I love you.
What happened in the fight, Jorge?
Well, from entertainment value, I feel like I wanted to do a lot more. I also feel like Usman did exactly what he had to do to neutralize me, was not really leave himself in my area and constantly, you know, take it to the safest place that it was for him, you know. So I knew that going into the fight, and that was a big concern if I had the gas tank to do it, to keep me off him. I knew that I could wrestle with him when he'd get into my legs, but I had to have enough energy to keep exploding off the cage. And it's something that I didn't have that day. My legs were a little flat. I don't want to make excuses, man. It is what it is. Once you sign to fight, you sign to fight. You don't, you know, at least me and the way that I came up, you're not, I'm not going to sit here. The facts are all out there, you know. And if I could get this rematch, you know, immediately or whenever it happens, I'll be in much better shape, and I'll give a much better representation of myself, man. You know, that fight was good, and I feel like I could do better, man.
Is that the reason you guys were friends at the end? Because I was surprised to see how friendly you were, even though fighters often do that because they respect the courage that it takes to do that.
Well, I told them some things, and we both agreed on it, you know, it was just like, all right, cool, you know, and he understood where I was coming from. I understood a little bit where he was coming from, and let's do it again. You know what I'm saying? I have respect for everybody in the sport that gets in the cage, you know? Leon Edwards, you know, people might think I dislike him the most. What happened, but I still have respect for that man, how he makes his money. I know better than anybody in the world how that makes, man. Everybody, every man and woman that gets in the cage, I know how they make their living, so I respect everybody, you know? It's just I don't want to be disrespected, and I got a mouth on me too, so if you're going to say things, I got to defend myself, you know?
Jorge Masvidal with us. Jorge Masvidal with us on ESPN Radio. I was blasting
Usman
yesterday.
He was
going to
give us something good there. Hold on a second. You're from Miami what, Jorge?
What happened then?
You know what? We all have a mouthpiece and a set of hands down here. It's just standard, you know? We could talk and we could back it up at any moment. 6-day notice, 6-week notice, don't matter. We're ready. I don't know if it's in Miami. Maybe it's in the water. I don't know. It's like get ready water.
Now talk,
Stugatz.
Have you done radio before?
Stugatz,
have you done radio before? Do you know how to do this?
Well, I mean, you threw about to Jorge for him to give us something good, and I think we should have just kept moving forward. But anyway, Jorge Masvidal with us here on ESPN Radio. Listen, yesterday, thank you, Jorge, I was blasting Usman because I spent money on that fight to watch you, to support you. I was up to 1 in the morning until that thing started, okay? And what I witnessed was not a fight. That guy does not fight. What he does is he holds you against the fence and he steps on your toes. That is not fighting. He squares up with you in the middle of the octagon. You end him in less than a minute, Jorge. Am I wrong?
I'm not going to say you're wrong, my brother. But it's part of fighting, you know. People got to stick to what they're good at. I try to stick to what I'm good at. It's just I didn't have the gas tank that I needed to keep the fight at my range the whole time to make it work for me, you know? So I just, I feel like I let a lot of people down in that sense, you know?
Did you have in your game plan that he would be such a toe stomper?
Yeah, but there's like one of those things that I don't care, you know? Yesterday I was, it doesn't hurt, you know? I was bike riding yesterday, played some spike ball after my 6 miles of bike riding, and went to the gym today, worked out, you know? So I'm in perfect health. I got some stitches in my face. That's the only thing that's stopping me from getting in the mat, you know. One of them came from a headbutt. One of them, I think, was an elbow. So, yeah, you know, it'll be like 8 days till I get back on the mat. But I'm in the gym. I'm running. I'm lifting, playing spike ball, staying active, you know.
Have you gotten some numbers yet to know how much you made on the fight?
Well, so far, I don't like to go off the what I see on the internet. I like to wait, and it takes 60 to 90 days to really get a solid picture of what's coming your way, right? So anything else before that, yeah, I could be just hyping myself up. So I like the weight. But what we're seeing from the pre-sales that they do have already kind of have told us, we did really, really, really good. We broke a lot of records just on pre-sales.
What does that mean, though? Like, if you had to guess where you want this to be in terms of money after talking so much about the money, what would be the low end?
It's a good low end. I don't know if I should say it, man.
Well, listen, Sonnen told us.
I'll explain something so you know a little better. They came to me with a deal at first that I did not like, and we were not willing to take a part of it, you know? And all this craziness happened, didn't have anybody to step in 6-day notice. It was willing to cut whatever amount of weight they had to in 6 days, travel across the world and compete against the current world champion. They didn't have nobody else. So I had leverage, you could say, right, on my side. And we gambled on myself that this would be a high-drawing pay-per-view, and I didn't get that much money guaranteed, but I did gamble on the pay-per-view side. And I went hard on that. I made it worth my while to cut the amount of weight and take the fight in such short notice. You know, so on that side, I did gamble. Like I say, I always gamble on myself. I'm always all in on myself. And, hell yeah.
Sonnen said he made $8 million.
I was just about to say, the guy from Dave Chappelle's show. You know, he had that famous saying that I can't say it on air, but I'm rich.
Okay. All right. So,
are you still babysitting? I mean,
hold on a second. So, Chael Sonnen made $8 million, he told us, for Anderson Silva. He had a mouth, too. He could sell his fights. You're assuming you're going to make more than that, yes?
Well, that's a no-brainer. You could just, because it's numbers. When my numbers finally get the totality of it, and then you just add up the numbers to his, and then that's it, you know? And then know that I got a little bit extra hooked up, you know? I got, like, things were good, you know?
Does the loss affect your value for the next fight very much?
This sport truly relies solely on the people, right? So it's up to the people, and the people could make their decisions or not, you know? As far as I go, my head's in a great place. It's in a better place before I went into the fight. It's in a much, much better place. I have a much more clear path on what I need to work on and what I need to keep improving on and what's going to work. You know, I have a lot of math on this guy. I have a lot of data on this guy, and I like what I see.
Stay there, Jorge. We're going to come back with Jorge Masvidal after this. We don't even have enough time to get into this particular subject matter, but you want to explain to the audience and to Jorge why it is you're a little nervous right now, Stugatz?
I mean, we're all very nervous. You're about to go down some serious paths with Jorge. You're going to do so in 4 minutes and like 32 seconds, which you're right is not enough time. And listen, we enjoy our relationship with Masvidal. I just want to go around, fly places with him and be in his corner, and you're about to go down a very dangerous, serious path.
Well, because people are asking us to disassociate ourselves from him with some of the stuff that he's been doing politically. So help me understand it, Jorge, because I discovered what QAnon was based on something you were doing on Twitter, and that seems reckless and irresponsible to me to be, you know, quoting fake quotes from Kurt Cobain that, you know, are about conspiracies. So help me understand what am I supposed to do here as you know, we get continual pressure to separate from you because of questionable politics?
For starters, you see, I can't agree with that right there with somebody. Like, if I go into a place, and we're seeing it a lot now happen, whatever my political stance is, that person being mistreated, that's not right. That's called oppression. And that's something that I've been hearing since I'm 6-7 years old. So one half of my family comes from South America, and the other half comes from Cuba. And that side of the Cuban side, they left communism, and my grandpa actually started a chapter that was anti-terrorism. I haven't told a lot of people this, but if you want to talk politics, here we go. So my family was an anti-communism group. They were considered a terrorism group in Cuba. They were called the AAA, and my grandpa was part of it, and some of his sons were part of it. One of my uncles worked for the Cuban government. He was actually very high up in the Cuban government. So I've been schooled on both sides of it since I've been very young, and I believe certain things have to take place before socialism happens and then communism, and I stand against everything that communism, and this country is that. America is that. People died way before me and you. People went to war for freedom and died for it. If you're part of this country, your liberty is on you. You have to be willing to die for it, because I'd rather death than not have freedom, and I mean that by every single word. So I stand with those that are against communism, that are against socialism. But people can have whatever stance. They could love me or hate me after I say my mind, but I'm always going to ride on the side that's against communism and socialism and even democratic socialism, because that leads to the destruction of societies. And you can't tell me one society that was socialist or communist that is still good and functioning. Now, all these, like, athletes and men, and I just get so heated about this, you know, and celebrities that give praise to, like, Fidel Castro or Che Guevara, like, man, are you effing serious? Do you know how much people he killed? Actual people that were my family got slayed by these people. And they don't know what socialism is or communism. It sounds beautiful in theory when you read it in books. Freeness for everybody, but it doesn't happen because somebody has to control that. And for that one person to control it, for you to say one person can have that much power, it's never going to work out. We saw it with Fidel Castro, what he did with Cuba. It's a perfect example. Cuba was a thriving place before Batista came into the picture, and then Fidel just was the nail in the coffin, you know?
Hold on, Jorge. Forgive me, because we're out of time, and I erred in asking this question so late in the program, and you didn't answer my question about the specifics of the conspiracy group and why that's reckless and irresponsible. But we don't have time, so we have to continue the conversation. Just stay there, and we'll tape something so that I do this correctly. I made a mistake bringing up this subject to placate the audience so late in the show. So just stay there for a second. We got to end the show. Forgive me for cutting you off, but I do want an answer to that question. Maybe we'll get it here off of air and we'll tape it and play it tomorrow. Thank you for being on with us. Okay.
Man.
That's why we were nervous.
I know. That's where we are. Cody, we botched that. You feel like we botched that, right? We screwed up there. Yes.
We will talk to you mañana. This was the Dan Levitard Show on ESPN Radio.